Coming to you from the Waffle House just outside of Halloween Town, it's the Liberal Arts.
A podcast about postgraduate life and the things we would study if someone were paying us.
Please, somebody pay us.
So hi everyone, I'm Science.
I'm Cleo.
And I'm Rissa.
And welcome. Are we a monthly show now, guys?
At this point, maybe. I could maybe kick us back into gear. We could do, like, the episodes we're doing today, we could just do, like, five of these, like,
go. Marathon recording sesh starts now.
Not now. Doctor Who comes on tonight. We can't do it now. But, like, honestly, I could just knock these out if you want to keep going.
You know what? We might have to do that. So as you may have guessed from context here, Riss has got the colloquium today because there's a lot going on in my life. I can't do it.
And mine.
Mm-hmm. I can't. Yeah.
The secret is to pick easy topics you already know everything about.
No one wants to hear my colloquium on knitting.
Actually, I would definitely hear
you
a colloquium
say that
on knitting.
Yeah. To me, knitting is magic. It's one of the closer things we have to creating something from nothing.
I agree.
It's true. Would you guys like a fun fact?
Sure.
Sure.
Okay, here's a question for you. Are viruses alive?
Yes.
Why do you say that, Nestor?
No?
Because they can
Cleo,
multiply.
I mean. Sure. So.
And they have DNA.
I mean, I'm going to be frank. I said no because Cleo said yes, and I wanted one of us to be right.
Well, actually, we don't know who's right because Cleo is absolutely correct that viruses have DNA, but they cannot reproduce by themselves. They have to enter another cell to reproduce, and scientists are up in the air about whether or not that means that they're alive by themselves.
What'd be interesting, though, is do they have a soul?
I mean, probably not.
I mean, I'm talking Aristotelian soul. Plants have souls.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I'm interested in this too now. Let me talk some more and we'll find out.
Do they have a will to reproduce?
Well, that's the thing, is I they want to, obviously. They do enter cells with intent to reproduce, you know, in whatever, instinctual, protein-driven movements that they make.
Do they in some way,
they don't
way,
exactly
like,
have brains.
Eat, like, take something in to fuel themselves and expel anything?
Not really.
Hmm.
Okay, but jellyfish don't have brains, and Aristotle would say that a jellyfish has a soul.
True, but jellyfish also have, like, reproductive systems and digestive systems, and a virus is basically just DNA in a small case.
Interesting.
Yes. What's good about this, though, is that scientists can use that. So, you know, do you know how geneticists do genetics? Because I sure don't, right?
Say,
I kind of had
it
in my mind.
I was hoping you would tell us.
Well, that's the thing, is I, in my mind, up until recently, I had it in my head that it was something like Jurassic Park with, like, computer models and computers.
Money.
Which is dumb.
Hannah, the science, you are aware that that was fiction.
Babe, I know. Michael Crichton's a well-informed writer. Fight me.
Hogwarts isn't real. It's important to me that you know that.
But one of the ways that geneticists manipulate genetic material is through the use of designed viruses. Now, all viruses do is enter other cells and use the cell's energy and space to replicate their own DNA. Which means that if you can insert DNA into a virus that you want replicated, that virus will replicate it no matter what.
Whoa.
So, for example, there is a kind of cancer therapy where you take a modified herpes virus with DNA that will kill cancer cells and only cancer cells.
Interesting.
I know!
Does it work?
It works.
Why don't we just use that all the time?
Because every cancer is different. Cancer's not one disease. It's a million diseases. So not everything is going to work all the time for... Yeah.
I have a friend right now whose son has cancer, and people keep asking them, well, why don't you do the immunogene therapy thing? It's like, because his cancer is completely resistant to that.
Yeah, like saying I'm raising money to fight cancer is like saying I'm raising money to fight bacterial diseases. You know, like all
I'm
of them.
I'm raising money to fight pollution.
I'm raising, yeah, I'm raising money to fight for the animals. I'm raising money for all the animals.
For all the children everywhere.
All the children.
To help the children. There's a lot of, cancer's complicated. It's very complicated, which is why it's kind of one of those never-ending things that we're always going to be researching. So, anyway, that's been my fun fact. Would you care to lead us in a mythic direction?
I would, yeah. So, as I said last time, we're going to be talking about Greek mythology today, which I'm really excited about.
You had a backing track there for a second.
What?
Don't worry about it, keep going.
What happened?
I was trying to make mythic noises.
You sure made some mythic noises. Please go on.
Continue.
Okay. So, anyway, I got to dig out a lot of my Greek books. Not Greek. I have Greek books. I didn't use those this time. I used my Greek mythology books. And it's just been really fun. Most of this stuff is stuff that I started writing out, like, I just know this stuff, and then I had to, like, fact check myself to make sure I was actually right. So it's been really fun just to see what I know and what I don't, you know, learning new stuff. I don't know what you guys know and what you don't. So what we're doing today is kind of the intro primer to some of the big players. I thought we'd start with the gods and then work our way towards humanity. Just to say, my sources are a big mix. Some of them are the more censored, polite, child-friendly, and some are the more risque, aka accurate. So just, you know, as a warning, if you're not into stories with sex and death in them, pick a different podcast for today.
And also maybe just stop watching television.
Yeah, yeah. Just all of it, really.
And reading anything.
Don't read any history, nothing like that. Yeah.
Probably
anyway.
Most of the Bible is out, too.
Yeah, for sure. All of comic books, most of music.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm also just not going to be making much distinction between Greek and Roman myths. I know that there are some differences, but for the most part, we're going to treat them like they're the same thing. Even if things are passed down by Roman sources, I'm going to keep using the Greek names for things. And these are just disclaimers for all of my colloquiums on Greek myth, of which this is the first of who knows, because the more I get into this, the more I remember that there are a lot of these stories. But today, let's start at the very beginning. A very good place to start.
If you didn't say it, someone was going to.
Exactly. In the beginning, there was heaven and earth. Their names were Gaia, or Mother Earth, and Uranus, or Father Sky, or heaven, or ether, whatever. I don't think anyone really created Gaia. It may be that Gaia created Uranus. I mean, that happens. She might be his mom. She's definitely married to him. This happens.
Yikes.
Welcome to Greek mythology. So Gaia, the earth, has always existed, and Uranus, or heaven, is, which by the way, yes, that is where the planet Uranus, or Uranus, comes from. It is just the Greek word for heaven, or heavens, you know, that kind of thing. So like in the Bible, whenever you hear, like, gods in heaven, or anything like that, that's just the word Uranus, and Gaia is just earth. These two, as the only beings in existence, obviously fell in love. And they bore children. Several children. At least 12 children to start with. 6 boys and 6 girls, who all coupled off since no one else was around. These are the beings we call the Titans. And you might recognize a few of their names. Oceanus, for example, whose name is quite obvious. He's the grandfather of someone we will encounter later named Metis. There's Phoebe. She's a Titaness, the mother of Leto, who we'll get to. Hyperion, the father of Selene, Helios, and Eos. That is, in order, the moon, the sun, and the dawn. Helios, at least, will come up later, too. And a name that's very hard to pronounce. that I'm messing up already, and I haven't said it yet. Mnemosyne. She's the mother of the nine muses. Her name means memory, and she's the mother of the muses. But the most important of these original 12 children are Cronus, also known as Saturn, and his wife, Rhea. So this is a bit of a theme in the Greek myths. The youngest son is often the most important, because they're the ones that cause their father trouble. And I've looked into this, like, why is this? And I've come to the decision that the reason is men in Greek myth are horrendous to their wives. And by the time the wife has had the final son, she's so fed up that she's gonna stop, and this son, this last one, is gonna be her means of revenge on her husband. This happens a lot.
Okay.
So bear that in mind. Look for that. It happens at least a couple of times. Anyway, that's exactly what happens to our original couple, Gaia and Uranus. See, these beautiful and strong titans aren't the only children they had. They had other children. Monster children. They had the Cyclopses and the Hecatoncheires.
The Cyclopses, what?
You've probably heard of. They're big giants with just one eye. Hecatoncheires are beings with 100 arms and 50 heads.
What the heck?
So why you can imagine.
Why so many?
Why not?
Okay.
Anyway, why so many is about what Uranus thought. He hated them and tried to get rid of them by hiding them. Basically, he shoved them back where they came from.
No.
Into Gaia. Which, okay. Like, Gaia is mad and in a lot of pain. And is really upset that her husband hates her kids. It as often is depicted, and especially if you read into any of the, like, kind of meta-mythology stuff, like the hero with the thousand faces and all that. I'm trying not to be too Freudian, because that book was extremely Freudian, but as is often, the mother loves all of her children, while the father only loves the good children.
Mm.
Anyway, because of this, Gaia goes to her youngest son, Cronus, who already kind of hates his dad. And she gives to him a weapon to use against his father, an adamantine scythe that can cut through the sky. But he doesn't actually kill.
Can we talk about adamantine?
Father. Yeah. It just means it's like a really strong metal.
Okay. Is it fake?
That's an excellent question. Chemist.
Well, listen, I think it's fake. I'm pretty sure it's fake.
I think it's just, in this sense, they're not talking about the elements. The Greeks don't know about the elements. To them, the elements are earth, you know, fire, water.
Earth, wind, and fire.
Yeah. In this, it just means, like, the strongest material you could have.
All right.
Yeah. So this extremely powerful weapon that can slice through the sky, his father, Uranus. But he doesn't actually kill his father. He waits until his father wants to lay with his mother again and castrates him so he can't have any more kids. Although, honestly, he kind of does have more kids as the blood spilled from this act falls to Earth and creates other creatures, such as the giants, the Furies, some of the nymphs, along with Aphrodite. We'll get to Aphrodite. She's got an interesting story. But
weird.
Yeah. By doing this, Cronus dethrones his father and makes himself, kind of declares himself in his father's place, the lord of all. But he wasn't exactly the good ruler his mom wanted him to be. See, they had managed to free the Cyclopses and Hecatoncheires to help Cronus fight his father. But Cronus doesn't really like them either, so he kind of put them back in prison. Which is about as bad a move as it sounds. So, of course, Gaia is like, what the heck, man? Now she has to find another champion to dethrone this guy. And that task also falls to Cronus's youngest son. So this time, however, Cronus is a little more genre savvy than his father. He knows what's up. Cronus knows that his children will be the death of him. So instead of just not having kids, like a normal person, he has a bunch of kids. And every time his wife gives birth, he literally swallows the baby whole. Like, he just eats it.
That's horrible.
That obviously makes no this, sense.
Deeply upsets his wife, Rhea.
Yeah, that I would also be upset.
Mm-hmm.
How's Rhea doing? How's she doing over there?
Not great, but she's getting smart about the whole thing. Eventually, she tries to trick him. So Rhea gives birth to yet another son, and instead of giving him to his father to eat, she takes a large rock and wraps it up in baby's clothes and presents that to her husband, who promptly swallows it.
How dense is Kronos?
I mean, there is another myth that previous to this, she had a son and then hid the kid. And he was like, where is the child? And she was like, oop, I gave birth to this baby horse. So he just ate the horse. Like, that seems like a thing that could happen. Sure.
Sure, but why not?
I mean, he's from a family where half his siblings have 100 arms.
Yeah, yeah. So anything could happen.
Genetics is fake.
Anyway, so Rhea's youngest son, Kronos' youngest son, who was saved by this rock trick, his name is Zeus.
A familiar
name. And Zeus does indeed follow in his father Kronos' footsteps. When he's old enough, Gaia, or in some stories Metis, and we'll get to Metis later, I promise, helps him by giving him some magic food, a magic potion, basically, that will cause Kronos to throw up everything that he has eaten.
Ever?
In this case, what he's eaten includes a very large rock and Zeus's 5 younger siblings.
And a baby horse.
Older siblings?
And possibly a horse. Sorry, his older siblings. Yeah, his older siblings.
Digestion, also fake.
Yep. I mean, when you're a Titan, you don't really need it.
That's fair.
Anyway, these siblings you might know the names of. Demeter, Hestia, Hera, Hades, and Poseidon.
Yep.
Ooh.
Know them. Mm-hmm. I know those ones.
We'll get to them later, too. By doing this, Zeus starts a war. It's him and his siblings, plus the Cyclopses and Hecatoncheires, which Zeus and Gaia freed again, against all of the other Titans.
How does that go for him?
Wins.
Good.
They seal up all the Titans, all but one, Atlas. We'll get to Atlas eventually, but not in this episode. They sealed them all up in this place called Tartarus in the deepest pits of the underworld, which, like, Gaia isn't too thrilled about, but you can't have everything, I guess. But Zeus, like, the one good thing Zeus ever does is finally stops this cycle by not re-imprisoning the Cyclopses and Hecatoncheires.
That's how it starts. You throw your siblings in jail. You throw your aunts and uncles in jail.
Then your parents get upset, and they gotta hire someone, and it's
bad. Then you start eating your kids, and...
Yeah.
There aren't any lawyers in ancient Greece, apparently, so you can't just, you know, bail them out or something. You must start a war.
I mean, bail them out by make your father throw them up, I guess.
So more like hurl them out.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so he does not re-imprison the Cyclopses and Hecatoncheires, who are like his uncles, I guess? Anyway, he puts them to work as the greatest smiths the world has ever known. And in exchange, they make Zeus the ultimate weapon, lightning bolts. This is Zeus's special power, which he alone can command, and it makes him more powerful than any other god. So the first generation was called the Titans. This generation is called the Gods. Okay, so foremost of the gods are the children of Kronos. Zeus, Hera, Poseidon, Hades, Demeter, Hestia, like I said. After that, there are children of other Titans. Leto, Metis, Helios, Selene, and the Muses are the ones that we're kind of going to keep up with. And there are other outliers who have been created by this process, like Aphrodite, who... So the nice myths say that she came from the sea foam, which is technically true, but she was more created from that thing which arose from the sea foam when Uranus's castration occurred.
Yuck.
And fell into the sea. So yuck. That explains a lot about Aphrodite, I feel. Anyway, I'm guessing that we're starting to recognize some names here.
Yes.
Yes.
But I still want to go through each of these one by one, just so, even if it's like a, I've heard that name, but I don't know who that is. So we're just going to kind of introduce our cast of characters here. So first we have Zeus. Zeus's Roman name is Jupiter, by the way. So there's a lot of planets here. Cronos is Saturn, Zeus is Jupiter. Zeus is, of course, the king of the gods, the ruler of Olympus. Olympus is the mountain in the sky where the gods live. Zeus is also a huge dick who just kind of goes around seducing and or raping everybody.
This is true.
As we shall see, Greece would have almost no problems or any heroes if Zeus could just keep it in his pants. But he can't. I'm going to try to give each of these people a symbol just to help you guys remember everybody as we go. So Zeus's symbol is definitely lightning. Most of these symbols are like, I didn't make these up. These are their symbols. Zeus's symbol is lightning. So next is Hera. Roman name is Juno, who is Zeus's sister and, unfortunately, Zeus's wife. Like I said, that happens. That's not why it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because she is the goddess of marriage. And also half of the most unfaithful, worst marriage ever. Hera is entirely faithful to her husband, who does not know what the word faithful means, I think. A lot of myths are gonna, Hera's gonna be kind of, not the villain, but an antagonist, because Hera can't really take revenge on her husband for his unfaithful ways. She tends to take it out on his lovers and his children. And since some of those children good guys...
Hey, Hera, that's not a healthy coping mechanism, my
babe. It's not, but, like, I kind of feel for Hera. Like, what is she gonna do?
Oh, no, yeah, I mean, I'm there with her, but, like, maybe see a therapist.
Yeah.
And also murder your husband.
Yeah, maybe just kill him.
Everybody else in ancient Greece is doing it.
Yeah. But Hera is the goddess of women and of marriage. She is associated with the peacock. I don't really know
why. You know what? It honestly explains a lot about Greek society and Greek myth and how all men are so terrible to their wives if Juno is treated so terribly in all of these myths and she's the goddess of women.
I have to say, she's not, like, all these people, even if I mention that they are depicted as bad guys, these people still had cults. They were worshipped as gods. There's a lot of people who, like, Hera would be the patron of. She's not a bad guy.
Okay.
But you'll see later how she kind of becomes an antagonist in a lot of the stories. We'll get to some of those today, actually. But other siblings of Zeus, Poseidon, whose Roman name is Neptune, is the god of the sea. So the three brothers of Cronus's children, Zeus, Poseidon, Hades, kind of split up the domain. If you think of the world as divided into four parts, earth, sea, sky, and the underworld, Zeus rules the air, Poseidon rules the sea, Hades rules the underworld, and the earth is where all of the other adventures happen. It's kind of ruled by everybody, including Mother Earth. But anyway, Poseidon rules the sea. His symbol is the trident, or a three-pronged spear, kind of like a big fork.
I am god of the big fork.
The third brother, Hades, also called Pluto, is, like I just said, the lord of the underworld. And he's not a terrible guy. He is not the antagonist. He's rather antisocial, but I really like Hades. He's got a big three-headed dog named Cerberus.
Which means Hades? Spot, if I recall.
Something like that, yeah.
That's amazing.
Hades doesn't really have a symbol, besides, like, death. He's got a helmet that can make him invisible.
I love the mental image of, hello, I'm Lord of the Underworld, and this is my three-headed dog, Spot.
Spot. Hades is overall a decently reasonable guy. He'll come up in a couple of these myths, but he kind of keeps to himself. Most of these are called the Pantheon that sits in Olympus. Hades tends to not show up to meetings. Like, they'll host a big meeting and invite him, and he's like, pass.
He doesn't, I mean, mood.
He doesn't like the other gods. He doesn't like hanging around them, and I do not blame him for that. Let's see, there's Hestia in Roman. She's Vesta. She's the goddess of the hearth, who is the actual best, the best person, the most drama-free life imaginable for a goddess. So pure, so good, so humble. She tended to be worshipped by people in their homes, but she did have some temples. The ones you might have heard of, have you heard of Rome's Vestal Virgins?
Yes.
Yes.
They're a very special, protected set of people who are virgins consecrated to the Temple of Hestia. Her symbol, and the thing which the Vestal Virgins attend, is the eternal sacred flame.
And if I recall correctly, they were some of the few consecrated women who were not temple prostitutes.
Exactly. And then there's Demeter, or Ceres, who is the goddess of the harvest. Very, very important to human beings, but we don't actually know a ton about her. She doesn't actually appear in many of the stories. Her symbol is grain, like I said, goddess of the harvest. She'll appear a couple times.
The Ceres is the root word for cereal, as in grain.
Yes, that's right. Yes, C-E-R-E-S is how it's typically spelled in English. We could stop there, but there are more. So can I just finish the pantheon for us?
Oh, go sure. for it.
Awesome. So there's 13 in all. 12 is the number normally cited, but that's because one of these original six gets replaced. Let's just start with my personal favorite of the Greek gods. Any guesses?
Athena?
Athena!
Yay.
Athena, whose Roman name is Minerva, who I love. Her story starts, as most Greek stories starts, with Zeus having sex with a woman who's not Hera.
Mm.
This time, it's Metis. I mentioned her earlier. She's the granddaughter of a titan named Oceanus. And in some myths, she was the one who originally helped Zeus overcome his father by giving him a magic potion to make him throw everyone else up.
So Zeus, she's just in kind of a crappy situation.
I don't know why you'd say that.
I feel like, I don't know. I don't want Zeus to be indebted to me. Just ever.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, that's the thing. It's weird. So, to the Greeks, being Zeus's lover is not a bad thing. It's a very good thing, and something to be like, wow, this is amazing. Like, it's a gift. Even if it destroys your life.
I hate that. Okay.
Yeah. So, Zeus doesn't actually rape Metis, for one.
Oh, well, okay.
So that's something. So that they sleep together, because honestly, who hasn't Zeus slept with? But he is afraid of the children she will bear. I think there's some prophecy that this child will be extremely powerful. And Zeus, having just killed his father, is probably quite afraid of having children.
He's got patricide on the brain.
Exactly. Yeah, so he, instead of just not having kids, because it's Zeus and he can't not, he goes and has a kid. And this time, Zeus turns to what I'm just going to call his go-to strategy when it comes to either A, getting rid of, or B, getting with women he fancies. He turns one of them into an animal.
Great.
This time, Zeus turns Metis into a fly, or rather, he tricks her into turning herself into a fly. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the story goes something like this. They can both shapeshift, because they're immortals and gods and stuff, and they're kind of having fun. He shapeshifts into an eagle, and so she shapeshifts into a bird, and they race, and so he shapeshifts into something else, and she follows, and then he shapeshifts into a fly, and she shapeshifts into a fly. And then he shapeshifts back to him to himself, and before she can switch out of a fly, he swallows her.
Ah!
Because I guess that's just how you get rid of your problems when you're the son of Kronos. You swallow them.
You eat them.
So he didn't wait for the baby and eat it. He just ate the mom.
Except not the middleman, as it were.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly. Why he swallowed a fly.
Perhaps
we know
he'll
why he swallowed a fly.
He won't. So apparently this is how you just get rid of your problems, but except that it isn't at all how you get rid of your problems, because Metis is already pregnant, and this whole being eaten thing is not going to stop her. In fact, she uses this little retreat to get some work done in preparation for her child. Metis basically sets up shop inside of Zeus's head.
Somewhere
gets out
in the left
her weaving loom, gets out her blacksmithing equipment. No idea where she got the supplies, but I think these are skills all women need.
Is he eating, like, was this in her purse? Or is
I don't
he
know.
Eating craft materials for some
I
reason?
I don't know. Why she's still in his head and not his stomach is also a question, but she's in his head now. She's
I told you, digestion
there.
Is fake.
Yeah. So she lives in his head now. She's got all her stuff. She makes a beautiful robe. She makes a helmet and a spear. Everything her unborn child will need. And all this pounding in his head of someone literally crafting a helmet inside his head give Zoots a headache, which, to be fair, he totally deserved. So he's got this pounding headache for months and months, and he finally just gets so fed up, he asks his son, Hephaestus. I'll introduce Hephaestus later, I just like Athena better, so we're gonna start with her. He asks his son, Hephaestus, to just do him a favor, split my aching head open with your axe. Or I think actually with like a pick and a hammer. So Hephaestus is like, aight. Shoves this thing into his head, hammers it, and Zeus's head splits open, and out pops Athena, fully grown, fully clothed, armed and armored, just out of Zeus's head, like,
ready to rumble.
What up?
And Hephaestus was like, whoa.
Yeah. So that's the story of Athena, the goddess of wisdom and of handcrafts and of warfare.
I love her.
Often very tactical, often defensive warfare. Her symbol is the owl and the aegis, which is the name of the armor she wears. We'll get to that another time. It's a whole thing. But yes, Athena is the goddess of wisdom, and I like her very much. She is also one of the many virgin goddesses, and the patron of Athens. That's where that gets its name. That's its own story as well. There are two gods in the pantheon born by Zeus and, miracle of miracles, his wife, Hera. These two are Ares, the god of war, and Hephaestus, the god of blacksmiths, metalwork, and volcanoes. We'll start with Ares. Ares is the firstborn of Zeus and Hera, and he is, honestly, the embodiment of physical fitness and ability. Like, just the ultimate jock, if you will. he is Ares. Fierce and ruthless and bloodthirsty and chaotic. Ares is the god of war, and despite his great strength, he tends to be a loser. Like, either the other patron of warfare, to Athena. Like, for instance, in the Trojan War, Greece versus Troy, Athena backs Greece, Ares backs Troy. Troy loses. That's what I mean by he's a loser. He also sometimes loses out to his younger brother, Hephaestus, which we'll get to. One of the biggest differences that I do want to point out between Greek and Roman myths is Ares' Roman counterpart, Mars, is probably one of the biggest differences from his Greek. He's a lot more dignified, which probably says a lot about the difference between Grecian and Roman militaries. Ares is generally symbolized with a plumed helmet, one of those kind of classic ones with the red kind of mohawk and mane.
With the shako?
Or just any weapon, crossed swords, spears, that kind of stuff. Like I said, god of war. There's a lot going on there.
He's my least favorite.
He's a lot of people's least favorite. Hephaestus, whose Roman name is Vulcan. I've mentioned him several
times.
Isn't
that something from them Star Treks?
I think you might be right.
One of them tracks in the stars.
most of these are planets, including this one. Hephaestus is the second son of Zeus and Hera. And his major origin story is that at one point he made his father mad. By some accounts, it was just because he was butt ugly, and by other accounts, he was attempting to defend his mother Hera against Zeus's wrath. But in any event, Zeus threw him out of heaven, physically, and he fell for several days before hitting the earth. And he does eventually make his way back, but because of this impact, he is forever crippled. He has a broken leg, like a gimp leg.
Hey, here's a question.
Yes.
It's not a question, it's more of a statement. Mount Olympus isn't that tall. How did he fall for several days?
It's a metaphor.
Because Mount Olympus is the Olympus in the sky, Hannah, not the physical mountain on Earth.
Because, I mean, even falling heavens. From, like, even the tallest high dive of all time only took about 8 minutes.
He fell for 7 days. Science. So that's how high Olympus is.
Science, we are talking about a story where a baby was just born out of her father's head, and you are complaining that Olympus is not tall enough.
You'll like this part, though. Since he's got a crippled leg, and he's a master builder, he gets buys. He makes a couple of mobility robots to help him around.
Yay!
That's beautiful.
No joke, he actually does make robots. It's pretty cool.
The Greeks made robots, just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
And steam engines and computers.
Yeah, so Hephaestus would be the god of all that. He is somewhat of a manipulative character in his own way. He doesn't have the brawn of his brother, but he's really clever, and he can often force people to give him what he wants by basically creating a trap for them and then refusing to let them out until they give him things. But he doesn't actually do it much. His symbol is a hammer, and if there is any weapon or armor used by the gods or heroes besides Zeus's lightning bolt, they were almost undoubtedly made by Hephaestus. So most of the time you hear about him, you don't hear about him, you hear about his handiwork, which... to be honest, I think is the way he'd like it.
Mm.
I mentioned your Aphrodite earlier. She's the only one of these who was not born of either Cronos or Zeus. She's kind of born by Uranus, in a way. Her Roman name is Venus, and Aphrodite is Hephaestus's wife. Although, honestly... gods only know how that happened. she's kind of... Hephaestus' consolation prize for the whole falling and leg thing is that he gets Aphrodite as his wife. Some people have described it like, if Ares is the ultimate football player, Aphrodite is the ultimate cheerleader. She's the goddess of love, pleasure, passion, beauty. You get it. She's the goddess of sex. And she and Ares... constantly sneak around behind Hephaestus' back, or in front of his face, sometimes. One of the myths we do have about Hephaestus is how he got really fed up of knowing that his wife and his older brother were going at it behind his back, and in his own bed, may I add.
Ew.
He crafted an inescapable net of chains and hung it over the bed, and caught them in the act by dropping the giant net on them, intending to shame them before all of Olympics. And everyone kind of came in and laughed at these two naked people having sex on a bed. And for the most part, Aphrodite and Ares didn't really care. Just kind of kept on doing what they were doing.
Yikes.
Yeah, so Hephaestus got something kind of like a divorce. Like, they're married, but he kind of got paid some money for his Ares basically had to pay him off, I think.
Good.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Cosmic alimony, I love that.
As for Aphrodite, she doesn't really have any specific symbols, but anything believed or truly a aphrodisiac kind of works as her symbol. And that's where it gets its name, aphrodisiacs.
Aphrodite was also one of the driving forces behind the Trojan War.
Yes, we'll get to that story. almost this entire intro is just going to be me saying, we'll get to that. Let's see, the rest of the pantheon are all other children Zeus has by different ladies, just like Athena was. But all they have some pretty interesting verse stories.
And the not single ladies.
And everybody, literally everybody.
Just all the ladies.
First up, we've got the twins, Artemis and Apollo, whose Roman names are Diana and... Apollo. these are most often associated with the moon and the sun, respectively. Apollo is the god of light, of prophecy, of music, of medicine. He's really important. Name something, he's probably the god of that. And his sister is the goddess of the hunt and of virginity, and interestingly, of childbirth. Or specifically, help in childbirth.
Like those things go together.
Midwifery. No, we'll get there. It's actually part of the story. Anyway, Artemis and Apollo are the children of Zeus by Leto, the daughter of the Titaness Phoebe. This time, shock of all shocks, there is no turning into animals involved. So...
wow.
So they let Leto go?
No. Leto does at one point disguise herself as a wolf, but it's not for sex. It's just to hide. So that's, I guess, okay. Anyway, okay. So Leto, this is one thing I just find interesting. Leto is said to be from Hyperborea, which literally means, like, north of the northern wind. I interpret this to be something like, I don't know, like, northern Europe, maybe even, like, Russia. I just find it really interesting, but that's not the point. The point is, Hera finds out that her husband got this chick pregnant, and no one even attempts to hide Leto this time. But Leto doesn't just get away with it. Hera gets pissed. Again, she can't really take out her rage on her husband, so she tends to take it out on all the women unfortunate enough to bear Zeus's children. And on the children. This time, Hera places a terrible curse on the heavily pregnant Leto. Hera orders all of the lands in the world, all of the actual ground, terra firma, to refuse Leto shelter. There is nowhere on this earth that will let you in. Not just the people, but the ground itself will drive you away. And this is basically decreeing that though you are pregnant, there is nowhere in the world you will be able to give birth.
That's horrible.
I know. So Leto, heavily pregnant, wanders around from place to place all over the world and finds nowhere that she can be safe and have her children. Until eventually she finds the island of Delos. Some people say Poseidon created this island out of pity for Leto. Delos is a floating island, untethered from the ground underneath the sea.
Uh-huh.
And, because of its an exceptional circumstance, is not bound by the curse that Hera placed upon all the land. It's a small island, but it has a palm tree, and so Leto sat down beneath it to give birth. First came Artemis, and she, even as a goddess just born, helped her own mother struggle through the birth of her brother Apollo, who was born after 9 days and 9 nights of labor.
Whoa.
Ouch.
So that's how Artemis gets the title of, you know, like the goddess of childbirth, is that she's never had children, but she aids her mother in giving birth to Apollo. Because there is a goddess of childbirth, and Hera basically forbade that goddess to attend Leto. But Artemis does it. I don't know how Artemis was born. That's a different story. Anyway, once they're born, even Hera can't keep them out of Olympus. And so, by Zeus's invite, Artemis and Apollo join the gods. And they are each given a mighty bow and arrows. Gold for Apollo and silver for Artemis. And these bows can kill with one shot at any distance. Cleanly and silently is the moon for Artemis. And suddenly and harshly is the sun for Apollo. Ooh. Artemis is also given a promise extracted by her father, the king of the gods, that she should never be given in marriage and shall live forever a virgin, attended by those like her, hunting in the wild woods of the world.
That's awesome.
Can you blame her?
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, really. the hunters of Artemis are a group of virginal women, not all of them human. It's more likely they're nymphs and stuff like that. Anyway, Artemis and Apollo are symbolized by the sun and the moon, and they're super protective of their mother, Leto. And I don't blame them for that.
Yeah, really.
Let's see. So we've got the sun and the moon. Artemis is mostly the moon, her bow, and then, like, a stag is very closely associated. We'll get to a story about that later. Apollo is associated not only with the sun, but also with... the lyre, like I said, he's the god of music, and with snakes, especially pythons, as these are very heavily associated with prophecy, especially the Oracle of Delphi, where the Pythia, like I said, same word as python, the Pythia is a special priestess at the Oracle of Delphi who is said to speak on behalf of Apollo. She was one of the most venerated voices. Like, if the Oracle of Delphi has said it is true. But she only spoke in quite cryptic riddles, you know? So there are only two Olympians left. Let's see, the next one is Hermes, or Mercury. He's the last of the original 12 Pantheonites. He's another son of Zeus and not Hera.
Mm-hmm.
Hermes' mother
is
Maia.
I always wondered about Hermes.
Yeah, his mother is Maia, not to be confused with Gaia. Maia is a daughter of the Titan Atlas. Maia is one of the few who successfully hid her escapades with Zeus from Hera. She hid in a cave while she bore and raised her child. Hermes is, on the whole, a very mischievous god. But he's not like a trickster god. He's not like Loki or anything like that. He's much more venerated than that. And he's a god of a ton of stuff. He's kind of the miscellaneous god that everything doesn't belong to Apollo probably belongs to this guy. But he gets himself into a lot of trouble, and we'll talk about some of that as we get onto some of these stories. He is the god of messengers and of travel, of crossroads, of borders, and of thieves. He's also the god of diplomacy and games, and he's sometimes associated with medicine because he carries the caduceus staff, a staff with two serpents wound around and sometimes wings. But it's more like a magic staff than anything medicinal. Apollo is the god of medicine for the most part. And by the way, each of these, it's like, this is the pantheonite associated with this thing, but there are a lot of sub-gods. So, like, while Apollo is the god of medicine, we're also going to talk about Asclepius, who is also the god of medicine, and stuff like that. Let's see. Anyway, so he's got this magic staff. He's mostly symbolized by the staff, or by his winged sandals and winged helmet, which, you'll see a lot of. That's really made its way into kind of popular culture. That's why the Flash originally wore a winged helmet, was because it was in reference to Hermes. Every time a superhero has super speed, they're said to have the speed of Hermes. And that's where a lot of this comes from. He's also, for whatever reason, this part doesn't have to be in the podcast if you don't want it, very often symbolized as just an erect penis. Yeah, so, yeah, that's a thing. So basically what it was, it used to be a thing, because he's the god of crossroads. If there was a crossroads, you put a statue of Hermes there, and when you craft a statue of Hermes, obviously you include the genitals in the statue, because all statues are naked. And eventually it just became too much to carve the whole Hermes, so then you had just this, like... just a kind of a dick, on the side of the road. This is mythology. But anyway, so Hermes, he doesn't have as interesting a birth story because Hera isn't part of the picture.
What, were you born in a cave? Yes.
Yes. Yes, I was. he's most often depicted in his early childhood in that, I think the story is something like before he was a day old, he went out and found this big herd of white cattle that belonged to Apollo and stole all of them by tying brushes to their tails so that as they walked, they sweeped up their own path so no one could follow him. But he eventually got caught, and Ares brought the little trickster back to his mom, was like, he stole all my cows. And he got some of the cows back, but he traded some away for this musical instrument which Hermes had created, which was the lyre. So Hermes created the lyre and gave it to Apollo. So Hermes and Apollo often go together, and they're both kind of the gods of miscellany different things. But Hermes, as the messenger of the god, also delivers their messages, and is kind of like the Grim Reaper as well. Like, technically that's Thanatos, who is death, but it's part of Hermes' job to accompany the souls of mortals to the underworld, to kind of make their final delivery, as it were, down to Hades. So he's often depicted that way as well. Anyway, so that makes 12, the Pantheonites. Except, there is one latecomer to Olympus, but he's one of the Greeks and Romans' absolute favorite. Dionysus, the god of wine, also called Bacchus, the god of wine and of madness. Now, I want you guys to understand, he isn't just the god of getting very drunk at a party. He is that, but also, the idea of religious madness or ecstasy is a very important part of Greek religion. This is the type of ecstasy that happens when you're very drunk, when you're on drugs, when you're having sex. All of those acts are very important to the Greeks, and important in a religious sense. The same way that in certain decades people began taking LSD and being like, this is a religious experience, the Greeks did that. Legit. And they found it very religious because it was this way of leaving themselves and connecting to something they felt greater. And I'm not saying that that's all their religion was, but there was a lot of it, and it was really important to them. Even Socrates has a whole thing, I should say Plato's writing, but Socrates has a whole thing about how maybe not all madness is bad because there is a madness that is divine, that kind of thing.
I was gonna say there's something similar in ancient Persia.
Yeah.
Which explains a lot of the story of Esther. Because you read that and you're just like, I'm sorry, you decided to solve your problems how?
And then
you understand them to all be drunk and high at the time.
Yeah, but then you understand, like, they literally considered it a religious experience to advise the king while smack drunk.
Yeah. But I mean, it was also a religious thing to sleep with a prostitute. That was very religious, if you did it correctly, basically. And I don't mean did the sex correctly. I mean the correct prostitute in the correct place and all that stuff. All of these things were religious. So Dionysus isn't just the god of parties.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. Did you do the sex correctly?
I mean... Fine. Anyway, it can be done incorrectly, just in case that was a question. It can be done incorrectly.
No, it was not a question.
5 of 10, no divine messages for you.
Sorry.
Dionysus, or Bacchus, you might hear the word, like, Bacchanalia is a festival of Bacchus. I don't know what the Greek word is, but anyway, Dionysus is interesting. He's called the twice-born god.
Dionysus Palooza. Sorry, I had to... Sorry. Twice-born god. Sorry, go on.
Yep. It's kind of a nice way of coming back round, because his story bears some similarity to Athena's, but it's even stranger. Dionysus is the son of Zeus by, again, not Hera, a woman named Semele, who is the daughter of Harmonia, who may have been the daughter of Ares and Aphrodite. Semele is by far and away the furthest from the Titans, and is in fact a mortal woman.
Huh.
As with Metis, Hera discovered Semele, but this time came to her in person. Now, there are two different accounts of what Hera said to her. In one account, she befriended her enough that Semele said, you know, you're not going to believe this, my lover is Zeus. And Hera was like, no way, he's not really Zeus. And she's like, yeah, he is. And she's like, you should make him prove it to you. Planting the seed of doubt in Semele that she had to make Zeus prove himself. The other account is that Hera came down and said, hey, I heard you're sleeping with my husband. And she was like, yeah, he's amazing. And Hera was like, you don't even know. He can be way better than that. Ask him to do you like he does me. Either way, this ends with Semele asking Zeus, while they are together, for a favor. And Zeus, as he's wont to do while he is with a woman, swears upon the river Styx. That's the river of the underworld. This is the strongest, most unbreakable vow anyone, including the gods, can make.
Very bad idea. Never swear.
He swears that he will give her anything she asks.
Oh, this is gonna end well.
It's gonna end terribly. Because that's the worst idea I've ever heard. Anyway, swearing an unbreakable vow that whatever she asks, he will give her, she asks him to prove he is Zeus by revealing himself and sleeping with her in all of his glory, as he does with Hera.
Oh no.
Zeus knows that this will in fact destroy Semele. To see him in his glory, much less to basically have sex with lightning, is something a mortal cannot handle.
Mm-hmm.
But he's bound by an unbreakable oath. He has to do it. So he does. And she literally explodes. Luckily, when she explodes, the baby, she's pregnant at this point. She's pregnant.
Okay, good.
The baby doesn't die. Zeus basically catches this fetus as it flies away from the explosion, and to keep it safe, he sews it into his own thigh. Because...
that's where babies come from.
He doesn't have a womb, and I guess this is the next best option. Close enough. Like, at least he didn't eat it, right?
That's fair.
So he sews this baby into his leg, and it works. A few months later, Dionysus is born, again, from Zeus's leg. The twice-born god. But when he's born, Zeus still knows he has to hide the boy from Hera, and so he has Hermes deliver the child to Earth, and Dionysus grows up there. But he doesn't grow up as a mortal, exactly. He basically invented wine, and he's got followers and worshippers who know he's a god, and he has some power over animals, especially leopards, for whatever reason. He tends to be symbolized by grapes and wine and leopards and dolphins, We'll get to the dolphins.
And dolphins.
But because of how much joy Dionysus brought mankind and how they worshipped him, Zeus wanted to bring his son up to Olympus to honor him as his right among the gods. And of course Hera was extremely upset about this. Not only was this pantheon already populated by enough of Zeus's children by other women, but this was the son of a mortal who died. And there are only 12 thrones in this hall, so it's not like there's room anyway. And, like, honestly, this should have been the end of it. But then there was Hestia. Hestia, blessed, lovely, far too overlooked Hestia, offers to give up her seat and sit by the fire, where she's more comfortable anyway.
Isn't she the goddess of hospitality?
Of the hearth. The goddess of the hearth and hospitality, yes, exactly. So the goddess of hospitality is extremely hospitable, gives up her own throne in the pantheon so that Dionysus may be exalted and come and live in Olympus with the gods. So, that brings our total to 13.
And Zeus, Hera hated Hestia from then on.
Hera probably hates everybody. So we've got Zeus, Hera, Poseidon, Hades, Demeter, Athena, Ares, Hephaestus, Artemis, Apollo, Hermes, Dionysus, and Hestia. That's by no means all of the gods. But the pantheon is kind of the circle of chief gods who rule Olympus and therefore rule the world. And next time I'm going to start telling some more of their stories and try to introduce some of the important mortals of Greek fame. But there's so many of these. Anyway, these are the ones that I consider, like, this is common knowledge. Everybody knows that Hephaestus is the god of smithing and Athena is the goddess of wisdom. But I realized that not everybody knows that. So I wanted to give you guys a brief primer.
I was gonna say, I'm one of those kids who was neck deep in mythology at one point, but I learned some things today.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah. I haven't ever heard the complete story of the birth of Athena, and I haven't heard about the birth of the other gods basically at all, for probably, I mean, obvious reasons.
Like I said, I grew up with these as kid stories that were censored. It would just be like, and Zeus married Metis, and it was like, did he?
Did he, though?
Yeah, there's a lot of that stuff. I reread this book now, and I'm like, oh, that's what we're calling it these days.
Shall we move into our post-grad problem?
Sure.
Okay. What you got for us today, Cleo?
So, I have a post-grad problem. I don't know if it's technically a post-grad problem. Do we have to call them post-grad problems anymore? Can we just call them life issues?
We've discussed this. It's the only catchy way.
Okay. Anyway. So, my post-grad problem is taxes.
Mm. Oh, boo.
Not the fact that I have to pay taxes, mind you.
I shouldn't boo taxes, but the tax code.
Yeah. So it's not the fact that I have to pay taxes, or even the fact that our tax code can be ridiculous. My problem is with other people's taxes.
Hmm? All right.
Namely, you have to pay them.
Yes?
Continue.
I work retail, right? And so, mm-hmm. I have lost count of the number of people who have tried to convince me that they don't have to pay sales tax.
Oh, no.
Why would you even make that argument?
I don't know.
Because
they don't want to. Like, one person literally looked at me and said, well, I've paid enough taxes in my life. And I wanted to be like, well, haven't we all? But, yeah, for some reason... Some people are convinced that they don't have to pay taxes and are sales tax on things that they, like, repairs and things that they buy from us. And some of it could be confusion on the property tax law where, like, in my state, if you're doing modifications on certain parts of your house or your land, they don't tax those. And since so some people are like, well, it's
there are some things that just don't get taxed.
Yeah, sure. And so some people are like, well, you're fixing my property, so you don't have to charge tax. And we're like, yeah, but we're fixing your watch, not your house.
That's... Do they not know... Okay, I'll listen. Until I moved to Montana, which has zero sales tax, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Property taxes are unspeakable, but sales tax were good. it's a good thing I don't own land. Until I moved to Montana, I would just go into any given interaction in a store expecting to pay sales tax.
Yeah.
Do these people not?
I think,
do they, like, go to the grocery store and quibble about the 17 cents they gotta pay for their cabbage? No.
But I don't, and this is what gets me, like, I would be a little more sympathetic if I was, like, taxing your underwear or something. That I could get is frustrating, but it's, like, it's jewelry. No one's making you do this. You are choosing to do this. And no, I have had people yell at me. I have had people tell me that they will not be buying this item if they have to pay sales tax. Goodness. I've had people, my favorite is the constant, you know, your total for this job is $200, so with tax, that'll be $218.50. So that's something I say a lot. So I know the tax rate for certain of our rates. Mm-hmm. It's like, it'd be $218.50. They'd be like, well, what's the cash price? $218.50. And they're like, yeah, but what's the cash price? And I'm like, we have to pay taxes on... I literally tell them, like, we have to pay taxes on this either way. And they go, really? I'm like, yeah, do you think we're just taking all the cash?
They think it's like a credit card tax or something?
Do you think... I don't know. It's not an online banking tax. It's a... Wow. No, there's a few people who think that if they pay us in tax, we're not reporting it. Or if they pay us in cash, we're not reporting it.
I mean...
Yeah. I'm like,
You're shady.
Yeah, so
yeah, that sounds like, super shady. How much shady business are these people doing that they expect that?
I had someone tell me that if I just talked to our lawyer beforehand, I would find the lawyer would say, nah, you don't have to pay taxes on the stuff. Oh, and I'm like, does this work for any other laws? Can I commit armed robbery if I talk to my lawyer first? It's just literally, no, people are like, I've had people look at me and they're like, well, what's the cash price? And I said, well, it's the same, you know, we have to pay taxes on it either way. And they're like, well, you don't have to.
You'll make a special exception and commit a crime for me. Because yeah. I'm special.
Yeah. Or I will take a chunk of the money that is paying us for all the labor we've done, and we'll pay your taxes for you out of the kindness of our hearts and get paid less for all the work we did.
Goodness.
Oh my god. I don't understand how you can drop several hundred dollars on an expensive piece of jewelry and then not quibble over willing 18? To pay
I've had someone the additional yell at me over $18. $8.
Oh my gosh.
In taxes. I'm just like, you were already paying how much? And you're going to sit in there and actually throw a temper tantrum in the middle of my lobby over $8.
Dang.
I won that argument, by the way. They paid the taxes. I just stood there and I was like, I'm so sorry. I don't have a choice, you know? I don't make the laws. And just kept repeating that until they bought it and then stormed out of the store and announced they were never coming back.
Good. Don't. Good.
But it's just like, I get that it's frustrating. I don't like paying taxes any more than anyone else does. But please don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah. Yeah,
we're not making...
You have the perfect... I think, Rissa, did you say you had the perfect solution?
I have the perfect solution to this.
Yeah.
Display all prices, including tax.
You know, that would be handy, wouldn't
That's
it?
That's exactly
that would be
what
nice.
They do in Britain, do. And it makes like, so we, much sense.
We tell people beforehand, like on repairs.
Don't tell people what their pre-tax price is, ever. Just tell them the price is $218, whatever.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, we could try that, but it's also, it would mean more work for us in the long run because we have so many different categories of things. We would have to go through and completely redo all our pricing categories. But we always tell people up front, we're just like, this is the cost, and this is the tax. Like,
right.
You live in this state, you know there's a sales tax. This is not Vermont.
I don't think it's something you guys can solve. Mm-hmm. It's more just like, I wish that the norm in America was to do this, because it is in other countries.
Yeah.
Like, if I go to a shop in Britain, and it says, you know, Snickers bar, £1, and I slap a £1 coin on the counter, I walk off with a Snickers bar, and no one says, what about the 2 cents change? That doesn't happen.
Yeah. And I get that's an American pricing system, and I agree and it I might be it. More efficient, but at the same time, if you've lived in this country for a while, and if you've lived in a state with tax for a while, you should not be shocked when this happens.
Yeah, really.
And you should not be yelling at me because you were paying taxes. Again, I'm
sorry.
Can
we just not yell at service people at all?
I don't make the laws, but I'm not going to break
that's a
them.
Good one.
I don't like you enough to break them for you.
Maybe I should just start saying that. It's like, I'm sorry, we have to pay tax either way, and I don't really know you well enough to break the law for you.
I, like, you have to be polite, and, like, you could have a person standing there having a complete you total meltdown. Politely. I have found a couple polite ways to be, like, to say it, and sometimes it's just people forget, and they're like, oh, I thought it was going to be 100, but now it's 109.25, and you can kind of be like, yeah, that's our price, but then Uncle Sam has his, and it becomes kind of a joke.
Yes, but, that's pretty good.
But if you have someone who's, like, determined to be mad about it, then you go, well, you don't have to. And I'm like, well, if we want to stay on the right side of the law, we do.
Just tell those people to go somewhere other than America. I once had a professor, he was an American professor, but he lived in Italy for several years. And he told me that tax dodging is the Italian national sport. I don't know how accurate it was, but...
Oh, gosh.
But it's just basically my post-grad problem is this. Please don't yell at me for acting according to laws I did not make. If you do not like the laws, go out and vote. We have midterm elections this year. Go out and vote for someone who will change them. Mm-hmm. Until then, I'm not going to jail for you.
So that was less of a problem and more of a message?
More of a campaign speech. I don't know. Go vote, people.
Yeah. Hey, Cleo, I heard we have listener mail.
We do. We have listener mail from Joanna, who was very sweet and sent us an email.
Oh, she said that she found us because of In Between.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's backwards to how I expected this to work. Wow, that's great.
That's not at all backwards to how I expected this to work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joanna. This is so good.
Would you care to read an excerpt there, Rissa?
Can you read the part? So she was talking about how in your last episode, Rissa, you told us to go home and think about what characters have been most influential from myths and stories. She sent us something about that, and I thought it was really good.
She shares a couple of things she grew up with, which is a lot of the same stuff I grew up with. Robin Hood and Redwall and Narnia and Lord of the Rings and mythology. Frick, yeah. Hey. I hope you liked this so far. Sorry there's so much sex, which probably wasn't there when you were a kid. But anyway.
It was. Your parents just didn't tell you.
Thankfully, and really quite cleverly, distilled some kind of lessons as opposed to characters. So she shares that she learned a thirst for adventure beyond the bounds of normal society. The understanding that you don't have to be powerful or brilliant or wealthy or beautiful to defeat evil. Good. And the knowledge that there is evil in the world, which must be opposed, and that opposition will take sacrifice.
So, Joanna, that's absolutely beautiful.
A really terrific summation, terrific lessons. Thank you so much for sharing this.
Thank you.
Gorgeous. Yes. And I really look forward to reading the rest of the notes that you gave us on those, because she gives some examples, too.
Thank you so much for emailing us, Joanna. If you would like to email us, you can reach us at theliberalarnts@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you, Joanna, and to all of our listeners for listening to us today. Thank you to Tristan from Vintage Lab Tech for our music and Caitlin Thompson for our graphics and design. And what else? What else am I missing?
Normally we thank the person who made up the where we're coming from, but
we made it
I think
up.
We just kind of made it up right now.
Like, yes.
Just now, so.
Yeah, we did. You're the hive mind.
Yep. Thank you, hive mind.
No, the three of us are a hive mind.
It's a bit self-congratulatory.
We're just going to put this one out of its misery and say, until next time, learn something worth knowing.
Yeah.
Yay. Recording.
Boop. Okay, good.
Hello, future Hanada, editing this episode.
Did you say Hanada?
Hanada? That's your new name. We've got Hannah and Hanada.
Oh, Hanada.
Oh, Hanada.